Have you ever read one of those novels or watched one of those TV programs where as you progress through the book, there's so many loose ends that are constantly tied together so beautifully that you think to yourself, I wonder if the author knew the end before they started the beginning. Have you ever read one of those where you actually go back and you watch the movie a second time and you catch all these things that were early on in the movie that you didn't even realize were part of the ending until you watched it a second time? There's a few movies like that, a few novels like that, where you just get the sense that this story didn't start until the author knew the end. And so they could write the story with the end in mind, and it changes how you write a story. We watch Lost once in a while, and Lost is a great example of one of those things where you realize very quickly that whoever's writing this has no idea what the end is, and they're going week for week trying to figure it out. And you're like, you guys are as lost as we are, aren't you? Have you ever been part of those stories where you're like, this guy has no idea how this is going to end, and we're all anticipating because he has no idea either? And you know, it's one of those experiences when you do step into a story that is so beautifully woven together that you have to go back and back again and just go, there's no way that could have happened, that just turns stories into these magical experiences that we have. And you know, we are at the end of what is lovingly known as the Old Testament today. I mean, this is it. Next week, we don't go back to the Old Testament. We probably won't go back to the Old Testament as a full story again for a long time. We'll jump in bits and pieces from now on, but we are done traveling this race. And as I took the week and I thought back and I looked back and I wanted to just try to capture where we've been and what we've seen and what we've experienced, I just wanted to see what it was that God has ultimately thrown on the table for us as we've done this journey and traveled this journey. I stepped back into our podcasts because I told Jeffy a long time ago, make sure that we have on our podcast everything that starts in the beginning of this journey in Genesis. So 2 years or so ago when we started the journey through the Old Testament, and I genuinely thought it was going to be a six-week series, not even kidding. That's what I thought God was going to leave me. And then I genuinely thought it was going to be a three-month series, a little expanded on the 6 weeks, and here we are two years later, and we're finally done. And I went back on the podcast, and I worked my way from the very first podcast on creation all the way through. I didn't listen to them, just so you know, this week, if you're thinking that, and you're like, what? You spent your week listening to your own podcast? No, I am not that insane. But I just went through and looked at all of the spots where we've hit the map as we've traveled through the story. And it was such a neat experience to see what we've had the opportunity to stare into, to catch a glimpse of, to listen into as the story has been unfolding. You know, the fact that we got to stand and get to stand and stare into the very beginning of time where the creator and sustainer comes along and as an artist would do on an empty canvas, just throws onto this canvas more beauty than you and I could ever imagine, creating out of nothing what was. Everything you and I have ever created, every new thing we've ever made has come out of what we've already experienced. So we expand on it, we paint a beautiful sunset, we paint a beautiful face, whatever it is, it all comes out of what we've already experienced. God, on an empty canvas, puts something that has come out of nothing but his own mind. And onto that canvas, we stood by almost holding our breath as God completed creation by putting mankind in the story and laid Adam and Eve into the garden. And he stepped back and he said, this is good. And then we were just in awe. I mean, just in awe of the fact that the creator God would walk in the garden next to Adam and Eve, talking with them, hanging out with them. And you're like, wow, what would that be like? And it was just amazing to watch. And then we watched in horror as one day, as God was doing his thing and Adam and Eve were doing theirs, the deceiver walked into their lives and started whispering stupidities into their head. Things like, you don't need him. He doesn't know everything. He doesn't have your best interest in mind. He's trying to keep you in a box. He's trying to put rules in your life so you can't have any fun. You can be your own God. You can know everything he knows. It's really good. And we watched as we were shouting and screaming, no, not now, not here. And they stepped in and they took that and they said, we're going to do it our way. And we watched in horror as sin entered into the story. And you know, when you get into moments like that in the story, you do have to sit back and go, maybe the author of the story who's writing this, when sin entered in, he had to kind of do a whole rewrite, like in Lost. Okay, what just happened? Who came up with that idea? We got to think this through. But in this story, as you unfold it and you watch it, you see that just as we write our parts into the story, it's as though God already wrote those parts in before we wrote them. You're just like, wow. And so we see Adam and Eve walk out of the garden, and you know it. I mean, you can feel it in your gut. This is it. This is it. It's the end. It's over. The God that created us disengages from us, and it's over. He starts from scratch, but not this God. No. He enters right into the story with this, and we watch sin as we stood by. We watched sin do its work on humanity to the point where, again, in horror, we watched as God said, things have gotten so bad on the planet that I'm going to have to wipe these people out. And you're like, what? Wipe them out in a flood? No, it can't be true. It shouldn't be true. What's going to happen? But you realize there's no other way because the people are so horrible that they're just going to wipe themselves out anyways. And as you see God bring the flood right before he does, you see this little glimmer in the story, and he pulls this little family out that haven't quite been corrupted as badly by all the mess, and he goes, oh, they're full of sin, yes, but I'm going to take him, and I'm not done with humanity yet, and he rescues them, and he puts them on a little boat, and you're like, what? This is our future? These are the people that we're counting on? Noah and his boys? We're so dead in the water. But at least everyone's not gone. What's God going to do now? And then we watch the story unfold. And out of Noah, humanity rebuilds themselves. The Tower of Babel happens. That crashes and burns. God spreads it into nations. And out of those nations, God, the author and perfecter of everything, chooses a man, Abraham, and pulls him out. And you know what he does? You know what he does? He takes this man and he says, I just want to be real clear with humanity for a second. What started as a process to create you to be involved with me in relationship forever ended when you walked out of the garden, and I know you've all been thinking, at what point are you going to leave us? So let me make myself abundantly clear to you. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. I have a plan for you that stretches into eternity, and I'm with you always. And so he starts making these promises to Abram that you're like, what? What is that? What kind of a promise is that? And you have to wonder, is God going to keep those promises? Because how bad are we really going to get? And so Abraham starts emerging, and God says things like, I will create more generations out of you than there are stars in the sky, and we're going to see this whole thing explode, and it's going to be beautiful. And we all, knowing what entered in the garden, we're going, I don't think so. And so it starts expanding. And humanity goes through its ups and downs, and eventually God says, okay, I'm going to, out of Abraham, choose for myself a people that I'm going to pour myself into faithfully, no matter what they do, to continually remind humanity that I am not done with this story, that this is not a story that just because they're writing sin into the story that I am either unaware of or somehow am incapable of writing the story the way it needs to play out. And so God speaks into that, and we jump into Joseph, and you remember this, the 12 brothers and the whole deal, and he gets to Egypt, and we see them in Egypt, and you start feeling light again. You're like, God's doing something here. He's opening up something here. There's a nation that's being born in there in Egypt, and it's extraordinary, and you wonder how it's all going to work. And then in Egypt, as they develop this nation that God has just said, I'm going to protect you, love you, stick with you, be with you, we wake up one day and they are smack dab in the middle of slavery. They're stuck in the Egyptian slavery market, and they're there, and nothing's happening, and you're like, God, what's the deal? And you start getting that inkling again, maybe God's done with us now. And then there's this guy in a little basket that floats down a river, ends up being a prince of Egypt, and you're like, what? And he's in Egypt, and he grows up as a prince, and you're just thinking, oh, maybe he's the hope. And then he goes and kills somebody, and he runs off into the desert, and the rest of his life is spent in the desert as a shepherd, wasting his life away, totally useless, unredeemable, and you're like, there goes our chance. And now God goes, oh, you have no idea, man. And at just the time you think Moses' story is over, God steps in and says, hey, Moses, come here. And the burning bush happens, and God goes, I got some plans for you. We're going to change the world. Moses goes, you don't get it. I'm a shepherd. I can't talk right. And God goes, I know. Let's do this. And he takes Moses, and he stands before the entire Egyptian powerhouse. And Moses says to them, look, I just want you to know God's going to take his people now. And the pharaohs go, I don't think so. And we laugh and cheer as the people walk out of Egypt. And we're like, you should have really listened the first time, because the God we know, he's real faithful. And we're starting to kind of get that sense of maybe God can be trusted. And he walks out, and we run into the Red Sea, and we're like, ah, what now? And the people are going nuts, and they're like, can we trust him? And God goes, watch, opens up the Red Sea. They walk through. There's a cloud in front of them. There's fire in front of them. We're all cheering. We're in the story. We're observing all this. We can't believe it. And then the enemy comes behind them, and the waters close, and it's all done. And we're like, oh, this is incredible. This is where the story needs to go. This is the kind of novel I love to read. And then the people get to the next spot, and they're going to go into the promised land, and all the promises of God are finally going to come true. And they send the spies into the land, and the spies come back, and we're like, what did you find? And they go. They actually go. They actually dare to look at God and say, look, we get the fact that you've stayed faithful to us, that you've kept us alive, that you've rescued us from the sin, that you've helped us get through slavery, that you've brought us out of Egypt, that you've led us with fire, and that you've opened the Red Sea, but you have not seen the walls in Jericho, and you have not seen how big those people are, and there's no way you're going to be able to rescue us from that. And we're all sitting observing this going, what are you people insane? Are you out of your minds? Don't you get it? And there's a little guy named Joshua and a little guy named Caleb, and they're doing exactly what we're doing. Are you all insane? And the entire nation goes, we don't like those two. And we see God go, all right. And just when you think God again is trying to figure out a new story, you start realizing as you read ahead and you read back that this was part of the story that he'd already written in. And you're like, how do you do that, God? How do you take the messes we make and they're already written into the story and they're already part of it? I don't understand. And God goes, I know. That's why you're human and I'm God. And so the whole thing starts unfolding and we see the 40 years in the desert. And during that time, God brings to the people something absolutely magical and wonderful and amazing. He brings into the lives of the people this thing we call the law. Because until now, we knew we were sinful. We knew we had a problem, but we couldn't put our fingers on it. And so God brings the law and he goes, let me show you what is required in order for you to be holy like me so that we can have relationship the way I created you in the garden in the first place. Here's what that looks like. And you know, wouldn't you know it, we look at that and go, I think that's doable. I really do. I think I can do that. I think we're good. Good. Thanks, God, for letting us know how we can get in with you. And God goes, we'll just have to finish the story later, won't we? Because the people from that moment on, when the law comes, all they spend the rest of their lives doing is breaking it. It's incredible, you know? And so we watch, right? We watch Moses get the law and receive it, and they start establishing all the systems in which they can begin to express their love for God. They can't quite figure out how to do it, and boom, right there, Joshua is standing on the edge once again of the promised land about to enter in, and they go in, and we are cheering in chapter 1 of Joshua as God says, once again, just a reminder, Joshua, I am with you. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. Stick with me, and I will stick with you in a way that you won't begin to be able to imagine. Be strong and courageous, Joshua, because I am your God. And we hear God shouting at humanity, if I'm with you, nothing can stand against you. And we walk into the promised land and God goes, let me show you what this exactly translates into. And Jericho's walls fall down and the nations scatter and the people come in. And what really is in every true sense an impossibility becomes true. The people of Israel take over the promised land. And you're like, wow. And God lays some specific things down for them and they don't listen. What a surprise. And so as we've stood back and observed the wonder of the taking over of conquest in the promised land, in that wonder, we see the horror of sin start doing its work once again. And though they have the law now, they don't keep it. And though they have the ways that God's laid out, that he said this leads to life and freedom, they don't do it. And so God establishes these incredible people that we know as the judges, but really a better way to look at them would be the judge redeemer, the judge rescuer, the one that comes in to rescue you by showing you what is right and by bringing you back. And as the people go into a mess, we have people like Gideon rise up. And you know, again, these people, like, you look at Gideon, you're like, Gideon, God? There's plenty of good guys to pick. Why Gideon? And God picks him and he becomes this incredible story. Guys like Samson, we bump into them and we're like, wow, that guy made a mess of his life. And God goes, guess what? I do not require people to constantly do things perfectly for my story to unfold. It's not like God is at our beck and call hoping against hope that we might get it right so that his neat story will actually turn out good. He goes, I could use the likes of Samson and Gideon any day of the week. And we see extraordinary stories unfold, not about man, but about God. And once again, we sit and we go, maybe, just maybe, we can trust all this. We walk out of the judges, and God starts getting involved with the people, and guess what they do? They raise their hand. You remember this? And we're all scratching our heads as the people go, in the political situation of today, God, I don't know if you've noticed, but some things are happening, and there are people that are getting kings, and these kings are leaders, and, you know, I've read John Maxwell's book, and if you don't have a leader, then you can't lead, and if there's no leader, then we need a king. We really need a king. And God goes, you don't need a king. You have a leader. You have me. I am your leader. Yeah, but you kind of are invisible, and it doesn't really work as well, and though we know that secretly, the rest of the nations don't, so they keep attacking us because they think we don't have a leader. So could you give us a king? And God goes, man, okay. And we see the rise of Saul. And again, we think in our minds, see, the author of the story has just been throwing another curveball, and he's not sure what to do. But don't worry, maybe he'll be able to write around it. And then as we finish the story out, we realize, he wrote that part of the story before it happened. He knew. He figured it out. I don't know how. Don't ask me. But somehow this author seems to write into the story what we think we're bringing into the story when we make a mess. And he goes, no, I've got it covered. And you start getting the sense of, I think God's in control. Really, I really do. And then God starts writing the story of the kings. And we see this incredible thing happen where we see the differences between the Sauls and the Davids and a whole list of other kings. We walk together here at Mosaic through the halls of the kings into the temples and the palaces. We see the secret things that go on, the child sacrifices that happen, the horrors, the politics, the mess. And we got ourselves into that whole mess. And we're standing there staring going, wow, this is really messy. And God sends into that mess the prophets. And he goes, don't worry. I'm going to talk loud and clear during this time. And the prophets come onto the scene. And through those prophets, as we entered into listening into their words as God spoke to them, we noticed something extraordinary happening, didn't we? We got to see as the God of the universe speaks directly into that time of history, into that story about that moment, and at exactly the same time is giving clues to humanity, real clues, big clues, massive clues about the bigger story and what he's really up to. And we start going, oh, is it possible? Could it be that God is actually speaking to people about a much bigger story, and he's shouting and whispering to us, I've already written the whole deal. I already know the end, and the end is about you and me discovering each other like it was in the garden, and I will get you there no matter what. Watch this. And we listen in, and we're cheering, and we're going, oh, it's going to change the whole world. And guess what the people do? The people go, thanks for that, God, appreciate it. Listen, could you help us out here, because we got some things we want to do. And you watch the entire thing fall apart, and Nebuchadnezzar comes in, and we stood by as all the hope we had in the prophets and the kings kind of just filtered down into nothing as the people ignored everything. And Babylon comes in and takes them from their home, from the promised land, into Babylon. And we're like, oh, could it be? Could it be that God is not faithful? That his promises will not come true? That maybe this is the end? And I can just imagine God going, you still haven't gotten it, have you? When I tell you I'll never leave you, I mean it. But here we are again going, maybe he left us. And we're reading the story and we're like, Babylon, Babylon, very scary. And then in the middle of Babylon, God jumps in and says, just in case you're wondering if I left you, meet Daniel. Daniel's a friend of mine. Let me share a few things about the story as it's unfolding. And we find out through Jeremiah and Daniel and others that the story of Babylon was a part of the story God had already written. And it was part of the journey of humanity to discover the wonder and power and faithfulness of God, and to realize the holiness and justice and untouchability of God, and to realize who we were. And so we walk into Babylon, and we're wondering and waiting to see where the story's going to go. And we walk out of Babylon, out of Daniel, into Ezra and Nehemiah, and we see them return to the land. And God uses the Persians, of all people on the planet, the Persians, he uses them to rescue his people and send them back to the land. And there they are, and they're doing their things, and they're rebuilding the wall. And we got last week, we got to listen in to the very last words that God spoke, the very last things that he said. And we're like, oh, what is he going to say? And he says to us, listen, the heart of following me, the desire to have me be your God and me be your rescuer, that's what matters to me, because ultimately that's all that's going to matter to you. You can follow the systems, you can be religious, you can do what you need to do, but at the end of the day, if your heart is not bent toward me, it'll never ever get you there. You'll always find yourself empty. And we hear him whisper that in Malachi. Yes, sacrifices, sure, whatever. Yes, covenant, sure. Yes, giving of yourself away. But these things are not about the system. They're about you discovering me. And we ended there. And as though we sit back and go, is this it? Is this where the story ends? If it were true, if that was the end of the story, we would be sitting there going, I wonder if humanity will ever get this right. I wonder if we'll ever get out of the patterns where it seems like there's a part of us that so desperately needs and wants a savior, and when we're in trouble, we run to him. But then again, there's a big, big, big part of us that just seems to constantly want to do it our way. And although God is constantly demonstrating himself to us, we are constantly missing the point. And we wonder, God, is there ever going to be a real hope for us to have real change and find ourselves perhaps, just maybe, in a place where the kind of relationship we could have with you would be something like what Adam and Eve might have had with you, where we actually want to follow you and we actually desire to do things your way and we actually battle the things that are against that. And God smiles and goes, we finished the Old Testament out, but that's why we call it the Old One, because the new one is about to come. And in Malachi, he says again, hold your breath. I've been writing a story from day one that will culminate in a place that will so blow your minds you won't know what to do with it. And so God begins to show us. He begins to tell us. He begins to clue us in the new part of the story, which we will get into. But I'm going to give you a quick little glimpse, a quick little peek over the hill to say, you want to know what God clues us in the new story about? He clues us in that from the beginning of time, he has been developing, writing a story for us, about us. In fact, he wrote the story before we even made the mistakes we did. And this story is a story about you and I discovering a God who will take what is broken and make it better, fix it. He will take what is lost and he will find it. He will take what is unredeemable and he will redeem it. He will take what is insignificant and bring significance to it. He will take what has no purpose and should just be cast out, and he will give it purpose and he will bring it together. And this story that he's writing, this story that he's bringing to us, he calls the gospel. The gospel. We hear this word all the time, but it translates very simply into one thing, the good news. And he says, I've got some great news for you, incredible news. And the Old Testament is not about a God of wrath who's the evil bad cop, and the New Testament is about the God of love who is the good cop and brings you coffee when you need it. In fact, what we discover is that the same God that traveled through the Old Testament rescuing and protecting and saving and staying faithful to and loving humanity through all their mess is the exact same God that is doing exactly the same thing in the New Testament, and it is the exact same God that keeps doing it today. And that God came to us and said, if you can't figure out that the life I have written for you is a life of freedom, and the life you keep writing for yourself is a life of death, you will never experience what I have for you in its fullest sense. You will keep dabbling in the things on this planet that seem so fun and so wonderful and bring you such joy because you can finally attain it, and every time you get there, it'll be another mirage. And we start listening into these whispers, and the good news emerges. And here's what the good news says. God says, I've spent all of time demonstrating, telling, saying, showing you that I am trustworthy, that I am faithful, that I am loving, that I am kind. I've also shown you the whole time that I am holy, that I am just, that I am untouchable, that I am so perfect and so huge and so big that if you even came into my presence, you would die. And you saw the dynamic of the two and you said, I've got this God that's untouchable and yet he loves me. I don't know. I don't see how that works. Because if he loves me, how can I touch him? And how does that work? And God goes, now you're starting to ask the right questions. And he starts saying, do you understand that when you walked into this planet and you walked out of the garden, that sin, the sin that's in you, is what keeps derailing the whole process? Yes, I brought the law to you, but what the law is powerless to do, because your sin nature makes it impossible to live up to it, I will do for you in a whole different way. So brace yourselves. And then God goes, okay, here's the gospel. Here's the good news. The story is not over at the end of the Old Testament. The story hasn't even begun. Because I am going to step in now and do something that when you reread the Old Testament, when I'm done with this part of the story, you're going to go, when we were in horror about you asking Abraham to sacrifice his son, now we understand why you had us feel that way. Because you wanted us to realize what you were going to do. And when we were in horror about you demonstrating how holy you were, when people even touched the Ark of the Covenant, they would die. And we went, how could you do that? How could you be loving? Now we're starting to understand why we had to get that through our heads. And when you started demonstrating to us the critical need for us to find ourselves surrendered to whatever you have, to give our life away for you, now we're starting to catch it. Because in the gospel, in the good news, God says this. You can work, you can play, you can run, and you can try, but you will never be able to become the person you need to be to have relationship with me. That ended through Adam when we left the garden. But because I have shown you in the Old Testament that I am faithful, that I am trustworthy, that I am loving, that I am powerful, that I am sovereign, and that the story that is being written, that I've figured it out. In fact, I came up with it. Since you know that, you can trust me enough to say, I want to give myself to your story. I want to know that since I can't get to you, that maybe you came to me. And the gospel culminates, the good news finds its critical mass in the story of a God, a creator, a sustainer, who becomes flesh and blood, walks on this planet perfectly, dies on this planet horribly, and is separated from his Father spiritually. And then, wouldn't you know it, happens to come right on back from the dead and announces to you and I am the way, the truth, and the life. Nobody gets to the Father except through me. You want to know what the story of the Old Testament gives us? It gives us every reason on the planet to once and for all finally understand that what the law was powerless to do, because your and my sinful nature weakens our ability to ever live up to it, Christ did for us on the cross. And now in Romans, Paul writes and says, let me tell you how it works. If you believe in your heart that Jesus is Lord, and you submit yourself to that belief, you go, I'm going to live your way now, and you confess with your mouth that he is Lord, then you are rescued. That's it. That's the end. You know, we as Christ followers, at least me, let me not say we, me, I as a Christ follower, so often forget how good the news is because it was good news for me a long time ago. I'm rescued now. I'm redeemed now. I have purpose now. I have significance up the wazoo. I don't even know what to do with myself. I know God is a story for me so cool that I just wake up every morning and I can't wait to see what's going to happen. And I forget that there was a time where hoping against hope and wishing against wishing, that I hoped that maybe there would be a story like that for just little old me. And to have discovered one day that despite the fact that I am everything I knew I was, insignificant and unredeemable and a mess, that this incredible creator didn't leave me, didn't forget me, didn't write me off, but instead the exact opposite, pursued me with his love to such an extent that he finally went, don't you get it? I have made a way for you. And the only problem that we so often face is we go, hold on, excuse me. If I buy into the Jesus deal, do I have to like live his way? And we go, you're still not getting it, are you? This is not about a religion or a system or a bunch of rules. It's not about how to live or how not to live. It's actually about an incredible brokenness in us that goes, I'm so done. I need something to rescue me. And the Old Testament leaves us there at the end. I'm so done. We are so done. We need something to rescue us. The 400 years of silence creates a bigger mess than probably the 4,000 years before. Well, maybe not, but close. And you just see it all over again. And then you bump into Jesus. And the New Testament unfolds and says, now there's finally real hope for real change. Because what you were fighting to change in yourself, Jesus will change in you. Do you realize that the Bible says that when we come to Christ, when we finally realize who he really is and say, you're it, this isn't by anything I do, but by what you do, that he takes what is dead and makes it alive, takes what has been unredeemable and redeems it, takes what is lost and he finds it. And then, listen carefully. Then, when he finds you and you find him, he awakens in you the real purpose to which he started the story in your life in the first place. That he will now make you fast, and as you run, you will bring him pleasure and you will bring glory to his name. And the more glory you bring to his name and the more pleasure you sense from him as you run the way he designed you to be, the more freedom you will experience because you were designed to bring pleasure to your Creator as he designed you to experience his pleasure in you so that you would sense the depths of your significance because he loves you. And it is there that we end the story of the Old Testament. And I hope with all my heart that you and I, who follow Christ, would walk out of here with a fresh sense of the beauty of the good news and want to spend our lives to live it and share it with everyone we find.